Welcome back to the second hour of the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donal Kavanagh with you on the show today on till 12 noon. Just to remind you, if you want to watch the show and the Zoom interviews as they happen and our guests in studio as well, you can do so on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, or on our Facebook pages as well. The show is live streaming there at the moment. Some of your comments before we move on. I absolutely agree with Bernie on the subject of judging women on their appearances. Many festivals are on at the moment, and during the opening parade, there's a festival queen. I find it embarrassing, being from here, that still goes on. People call it the lovely lady competition and laugh about it, but I believe it's degrading and belittling to women and should be left in the past. That refers to our conversation with Labour's Buried in the Land in Leitrim about the Rose of Tralee. Another caller says the Rose of Tralee is an Irish tradition. Dinosaurs like that have no place to be representing the public. I think that's a reference to, I don't think there's any need to be disrespectful in names like that. Bernie's opinion, if you agree with it or not, is a perfectly valid opinion to hold, and she's perfectly entitled to have her opinion. It sounds like that woman is a little bit jealous that maybe she can't take... No, there's no need for that sort of thing. People can't allow women, men or anyone else to do what they want without Karens coming on the radio to push their own opinions. But you have now come and sent in a comment to push your opinion. I mean, there are differing opinions and people express them. That's the basis of discussion. It's the basis of democracy. It's the basis of what this show is all about. People have an opinion and people express that opinion, and people should have the right to express that opinion without having snide comments made about them, which don't do anything to further any argument. Caller says, if you don't like it, turn the TV off. Fair enough. I'll be honest, Rose of Tralee isn't my bag. I have no interest in it, and I will not watch it. Simple as that. If I want to line up in a nice frock, that's up to me. I don't need anyone telling me what to do. Those girls are highly educated, and I absolutely, they are. And I mean, if you heard our interview with Adele yesterday, the winner of the Mary from Dunloe Festival, as I said when speaking to Bernie, a hugely intelligent, hugely capable and a hugely accomplished woman who does not need the validation of any man or any judging panel, and absolutely got what she got on her own merits, and is a great example. Women can't do everything men can do. Look at all the world records. Similarly, there's many things men cannot do, like the greatest achievement a human being can do, which is to give birth to the most precious baby. This is a feminist mistruth. Right. Not quite sure exactly the point being made there. Now, we were speaking to Stephen about the rise in cocaine. Caller says, I have no sympathy for people that take cocaine or any other drugs. They deserve all they get because they're quite aware of the outcome, and they're costing people that are struggling to live normally, including their own families. Another caller says, the amount of people driving on cocaine is frightening. And just two comments. One caller says, I was out this week at one of the many events around Donegal at the moment. It was a great day out. Great to see. Good music. Everything really well organised. But you would need deep pockets. 3 bags of chips and 1 burger, €21. I went to a sweet stall. That was worse. A good day out. Just wondering what everyone else thought. There is always going to be, I suppose, a premium when you're at a festival or you're at something popular like that, when there are food vans or whatever. There is always going to be a premium in terms of the cost you're paying. That, I think, is just part of the way these things operate. Well, the caller says, maybe you'd ask all the small business owners, what do they think of all these new rules the government's introducing? 3 days sick pay, if off sick, paid by the employer. Employer's expenses may have, you know, having to pay someone else to cover the position. 5 days paid leave for domestic abuse, like that paid by the employer. That's 8 days. And now the new automatic enrolment to a pension paid by the employer again. Why do we pay PRSI? Is this not to cover the pension? And of course, if you tip a server, that's taxable. So you're tipping the government as well. 50% goes to the taxman. The government is slowly putting small businesses out of business. Can you please discuss this serious issue? Leo Varadkar is very generous with other employers' money. So says a caller who I presume, and I'm making a presumption, but I think may very well themselves be an employer. It's an interesting point, and if you have any perspective on it, please do get in touch. Irish parents are paying around €30 million a year in voluntary contributions to schools. We referenced this earlier as a sort of a poll. So do you pay that voluntary contribution? Should parents have to pay it? And are we at a point now where the voluntary contribution is actually starting to make up part of the school's everyday expenses rather than what it should be used for, which is extras to enhance the children's experience in the school. What are your views on that particular issue? Be interesting to hear from you. Heritage Week, an interesting, I find this very interesting actually. Luke Kelly has been named as the person who best represents Irish heritage. That's according to a poll. The Dublin musician received 23% of the vote, followed by Christy Moore in second place. The survey ahead of National Heritage Week also found stew was the most traditional Irish meal. That was followed by bacon and cabbage and the full Irish breakfast. Now, the interesting thing about Luke Kelly as the person who best represents Irish heritage, certainly in terms of music, Luke Kelly is an absolute powerhouse of music. I can't help but wonder if you were looking for someone to express Irish heritage, I'd be maybe thinking someone more like Máirreadh Muine or Moya Brennan, both of whom play traditional Irish music and embody that culture, but also speak the Irish language. I'm just, and you know, and I speak as someone who, apart from what Cúpla Focal I can remember from my Leaving Cert 42 years ago, I am not an Irish speaker, but I absolutely recognise that if you're looking for someone that's going to encompass and sum up the heritage of our country, the language has got to be part of that. So I wonder, I can't look beyond people like Moya or Máirreadh in terms of someone that embodies Irish heritage. But it's a very, very interesting point. And that's not to take anything away from Luke Kelly. I mean, his voice is phenomenal. And Grace is just one of the most gorgeous songs. And Scorn Not His Simplicity, which is another wonderful song. And, you know, Luke Kelly's singing of that song is masterful. Again, Christy, absolutely a legend. You can't deny that. But I wonder, is there more to Irish heritage than that? It's a very interesting issue, actually. Be interested to hear your views. And while we're speaking of heritage, let's just very briefly remind you of our National Heritage Week competition. Heritage Week gets underway on Saturday, which is basically the day after tomorrow, and it lasts until the following Saturday, August 12th to 20th inclusive. You can go on heritageweek.ie, look at all the events that are happening in Dublin, and there are a lot of them. You can create your own heritage trail and celebrate the wonderful heritage of our county, our region and our country. Now, we have three clues pointing to a venue in Donegal. It's a venue which isn't necessarily in itself yet a heritage building as such. It's fairly modern, but a lot of Heritage Week events will be hosted there, and a lot of exhibitions and things in this particular building do reflect our heritage. The three clues are: I was built and completed in July 2007, I am located in Letterkenny, and initially I'm known as the RCC. What is the name of that building? You can text us on 086 60 25000 with your name and your answer. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Now, our next item is on Zoom, and it's an interesting and a positive one, because I knew this was coming up, and then when I heard the news this morning, realised the Irish Farmers Journal has published a survey showing that there would be significant support for a farmers' party in this country should such a party be formed. Now, there is a Farmers' Alliance which met last week to outline the main objectives of their organisation. We are joined on Zoom by two representatives of that body. We're joined by Liam McLaughlin, who is founder of the Farmers' Alliance, and we're also joined by Helen O'Sullivan, who is a spokesperson for that body. Liam, first of all, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Liam, if the Farmers' Alliance got together, now we know that there's been a lot of discussion in national politics in recent months, Michael Fitzmaurice in particular, who is in the Rural Alliance Group of Independents in the Dáil, has also been speaking about this, that some sort of a farmers' party, a rural-oriented party. What you're doing seems to very much dovetail with what he's speaking about. Do you believe there is a genuine momentum here?
There definitely is. Listen, the feedback on the ground, 100% there is. Well, listen, we run a poll on a couple of our groups, and that poll was put out to farmers, and it was basically put to them. There was two suggestions, and one was, do they believe that we need a political party, basically bringing the independents together and forming a political party, or do we need a completely new party with all new faces? And 97% of the farmers voted in favour of a new farmers' party with all new faces.
So basically, you will not necessarily be aligning yourself with Michael Fitzmaurice or any other existing TD in Dáil Éireann?
Well, listen, the people are not calling for that, and I'm a great believer in working off feedback, and I've done that for years. Listen, I have a couple of groups going, and I found it worked well. Like, and at the end of the day, like, you really have to work on what the public are telling you. Like, and listen, nothing against the independents or anything else, but like, let's be straight about it. Like, you know, you've got independents. There's some great people out there, but at the end of the day, we've had independents about for years, and they're really only one voice. Like, so we definitely need to bump things up a bit and get a strong party on the ground working for the people, you know.
One of the models you've chosen is Ní Nearrtha Cuirle Chéile. There is no strength without unity, and that appears to be at the absolute key core of what you're saying, that you believe that there is something that unites Irish farmers, and that's something you want to tap into.
Yeah, definitely. And listen, it goes outside the farming circle now too. Listen, we've got the general public seem to be coming behind us as well. We've got support coming out of towns and cities and all sorts of rural areas. You know, it's no longer about it's the farmers that's heading it up. But basically, we are definitely here to represent everybody. And everybody, you know, these people all seem to be coming forward looking for help now, you know. And there's very little negativity behind what we're doing, you know. A lot of positive feedback coming in, you know, and support.
One of the things you want to do is to challenge EU policy, and presumably that would involve at its absolute heart a root and branch review and potential restructuring of CAP, the Common Agricultural Policy.
Yeah, well, listen, we're not anti-EU, like, but there's certain regulations and things coming down the line there at the moment that are not suiting any farmer. Like, you know, these things are not designed for a lot of farms, you know. Like, we've got re-wetting, we've got all sorts of environmental schemes. And my firm belief is, listen, I'm all for looking after the environment. I'm quite willing to go into schemes, etc. But they have to be designed around the Pacific farm. You know, you can't put out a scheme that's going to and think it's going to suit everybody, you know. I think each farm should be given the opportunity to have some sort of scheme designed for their farm. You know, I know if somebody came here, like, for instance, between myself and some planner, we could come up with a great scheme that would suit my farm but mightn't suit somebody down the road, you know, that's more intensive than me, you know. So I think a lot of these things that are coming down the line definitely need to be challenged, you know, and we're not just going to lie down now and take everything that's been thrown at it, because there's a lot of unfairness there towards the farmer, you know.
I want to bring in Helen O'Sullivan, a spokesperson with the Farmers Alliance, who's joined us as well. Helen, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having us on.
It's our pleasure. Helen, a number of policy issues have been outlined by the Farmers Alliance. Many of them we've already heard expressed by farm organisations, expressed by independents, expressed by others, ensuring primary producers get a fair share of the retail price, looking for fair representation, fair income, fair cost of living, food security. But one of the interesting ones here is, and it's number one on the list, so presumably this is one of the first things that came out, and that is the freedom to farm. And there are two ways of looking at the EU, and we touched on it there with Liam. One way is to look at the EU as an enabler, which supports farmers. The other way is to look at the EU as a regulator, which limits what farmers can do. Is the balance maybe tipping towards regulator rather than enabler at the moment?
Absolutely. We feel that there's actually too much dictatorship coming from Europe. You know, there's a lot of red tape out there at the moment and regulation around farming. We feel that we can't really farm our own land anymore due to all of this red tape. Unfortunately, you know, our government seems to kind of be rolling out this for EU. The EU kind of tell our government, you know, to jump, and our government kind of says, how high? You know, so we feel we're let down there. We don't really have representation there. Also, our European Commissioner, Ms. Ursula von der Leyen, she wants to be, carbon-free by 2050. But we think she's been very hypocritical, because she's on about now trying to ratify a deal with the Mercosur, and that's where there's going to be 99,000 tonnes of beef imported into Europe. I mean, there's a huge carbon footprint there with that. Just to give you an example there, to produce 1 kg of meat here in Ireland, it's less than 18 kgs of carbon what we produce. But if you're to bring in 1 kg of meat from Brazil, you're talking about 1,000 kgs. So it's very hypocritical. It's kind of like, you know, let's get Europe carbon neutral by 2050, but at the cost of the rest of the world. So by us playing part in that and taking in imports from the likes of Brazil, we are playing a part in cutting down the rainforest and you know, not having the rest of the world meet their targets.
People will maybe not have heard Mercosur referenced for a while. It was a very big story perhaps a year and a half, 2 years ago, and certainly just before COVID, it was a huge story. Now, COVID maybe moved it off the front pages for a while. But very much from what you're saying then, Mercosur may have been long-fingered, but by no means was Mercosur actually scrapped. And it seems going to go ahead.
Yeah, I think they actually just parted for a while, just again to distract us from it while they're working on something else. I mean, the Mercosur deal includes importing meat from the likes of Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay. I mean, they have absolutely zero regulations out there. Here in Ireland, you know, we can trace everything back to the day the calf was born. We have to jump through many hoops, as every farmer will tell you. There's an awful lot of red tape. It puts an awful lot of pressure on the farmer. You know, all of these pressures coming together is not good for a farmer's mental health, between that and the weather. And then also we're being kind of labelled as environmental terrorists, which I think is totally wrong. I mean, every day you put on social media or put on television or radio, you know, farmers are causing climate change. We're being blamed for it. Meat is bad for you. You know, we're the cause of the bad water quality. No mention about the 7.5 million litres that are going in on a daily basis to our water courses. Again, it's all the farmers' fault. So we feel there's an awful lot of animosity out there towards us. And we think it's unfair. We think there's a huge gap there between the urban and rural dwellers. And that's due to misinformation, and that's part of what we want to do. We want to get the truth out there and let the people know it's not our fault. In fact, we farm very sustainably. We're the most sustainable producers of food in the world. We have the best quality food in the whole world. And in fact, I think we should be the ones to lead the way in Europe to provide Europe and beyond with that sustainable food. We have less carbon footprint compared to any country, so it makes a lot more sense to me for us to export it than to be imported from Brazil.
What happens next? There is obviously momentum there. You had a big meeting on Saturday last to outline your main objectives. The Irish Farmers Journal, you'll have seen, obviously has published a poll today saying there would be huge support for a farmers' political party. Now, we're looking ahead in May, June of next year. We're going to have local and European elections. Could you foresee the Farmers Alliance moving candidates either locally or in Europe for 2024?
Absolutely. I don't see why not. I think there's a huge political will out there for a new party. And again, it's, you know, even though we're called Farmers Alliance, we're not just for farmers, we're for everybody. You know, the one thing we all have in common here is food. So both urban and rural people eat that, and we have the finest of it. So we want to continue producing that for our nation and beyond. So I've no doubt in my mind that we will be having candidates running for local elections next year and also for Europe. I don't see why not. Unfortunately, a lot of these decisions are being made at the table and we have nobody representing us. And this needs to change, because if we can't make change now, then we mightn't have farmers to be fighting for in the future.
Liam McLaughlin, one of the other findings of that Irish Farmers Journal poll was that support for Charlie McConnellogue, Minister for Agriculture, appears to be going down. Now, you obviously, as an English own man, will know Charlie McConnellogue, I'm sure. From the point of view of the Farmers Alliance, what's your view on Charlie McConnellogue's performance as Minister for Agriculture? Is he a minister that you believe you can trust going into the future?
Listen, Charlie, I have nothing against Charlie. Charlie's a sound man and a gentleman, but listen, I fear Charlie's just a puppet on strings for Europe at the moment. Charlie recently had a meeting in Greencastle with Fisheries and the Maker Group, etc. And to be quite honest, it was actually embarrassing being in the room, because Charlie just possibly couldn't wait to get out of that room. And I do believe definitely, I agree with what you're saying in light of the support going down. Like, Charlie's not going in for another term, that's for sure, I would say. But I do believe there's an opportunity there for somebody to take it up and maybe give the mica homeowners especially a bit more support here, because they're obviously not being represented either. Like, but as for Charlie, listen, again, I'll say it, like, Charlie's a sound man and a gentleman, but just unfortunately, there's people above him controlling him, and there's only so much he can do as far as I'm concerned. And I think we need somebody now that's prepared to fight back against the powers that be above them, you know.
Are you a potential candidate yourself, Liam? I'm sure there'll be a lot of people in the show and will be looking to see now if they're going to see Liam McLaughlin's name either for Donegal County Council or for Europe.
Listen, I wouldn't rule nothing out, but I'm not going to commit to anything at the moment. We have candidates lined up there at the moment for various areas down the country already, like, and we have more coming on board there. And we're running through interviews, etc. So listen, I'll put it out there. Anybody in Donegal interested, give me a shout, like. And but as I say, I ruled nothing out. But we'll definitely have candidates in Donegal. We would hope to have a few candidates around Donegal as well, you know.
Presumably, given what you've said there about the defective block situations, you'll be having discussions with the MICA Action Group as well. Potentially, maybe some alliance between the two of you, rather than have, there has been talk about MAG running its own candidate. So maybe rather than a Farmers Alliance candidate and a MICA Action candidate, maybe have an agreed candidate between the two. Is that potentially on the table?
Listen, I regularly have phone calls with some of the MICA Action Group there, some of them be in contact with me, and they're actually a group of people I'm very much supportive of. It breaks my heart to look at what's going on. I've actually seen a woman sitting in there not that long ago, and she's in her sitting room with echo checks behind the sofa, propping up bison slabs above her children's heads. And if any local councillor or people don't see that needs addressing and needs sorted right away, because listen, what's it going to take here? Is somebody going to lose their life before we actually take action on it and get them the deal they're looking for, as I say? But as for lining up with the MICA Action Group, definitely I'd be open to talks with them 100%, very interested in helping them whatever way we can, you know.
Helen, I want to give the final word to yourself. The Irish Farmers Journal finding this morning, now it's obviously, it makes the big headline, 3 in 4 farmers would vote for a new Farmers Party. Does that make you think that the Farmers Alliance, with some careful strategic planning, can create some upsets in the forthcoming local and European elections?
I have no doubt in my mind that we will be causing upsets. But look, if we let things the way they are, you know, sure nothing's going to happen. And people are crying out for change and help. And again, it's not just in the farming area either, along with the urban dwellings, but our fisheries, you know, that sector has been decimated as well. And a lot of regulations coming from Europe there as well. So, I mean, Donegal is a big fishing area, as is West Cork and Castletown Bear, Baltimore. But like, you know, they're in the same boat as ourselves, excuse the pun. I mean, their livelihoods are being taken away as well. And, you know, you have foreigners coming in here taking fish out of our waters, no regulation, no inspection, but yet if one of our fishermen, you know, caught one fish over quota, they'd be fined and put into jail. So I think it's very galling to see this kind of carry on going on. I think there needs to be a fairer life for both fishermen, farmers and everyone in general, you know. So, you know, we probably will have to rock the boat, again, excuse the pun, but look, if we let things where they are, nothing will happen.
Finally, at the start of the conversation, I was speaking to Liam about the comments made recently by Michael Fitzmaurice in the Dáil. Another comment has come in saying, I feel the Farmers Alliance would work well with ANTHU. I would respectfully suggest that they liaise with ANTHU and increase the voice for rural Ireland in the Dáil. I take it you would stick to the same perspective that Liam offered earlier, which was the desire of the farmers is new faces and a new initiative, and that's the road you'll be going down.
Well, that's what people seem to be looking for. You know, originally we did speak with the independents and they seem kind of set on doing their own thing. And, you know, a lot of people were kind of telling us to go clean slate, as in, you know, some people mightn't want to vote for independent TDs as they might have voted on different things with the government and that might have upset them. So the feedback we're getting back from the people is, you know, go clean slate, put in your own candidates. And that's not just people from rural areas. We're looking for people from all professional backgrounds, both rural and urban. We want to be there to represent everyone, not just the farmers, but everybody.
Helen, and indeed Liam as well, thank you very much indeed to both of you for speaking to us on the programme this morning. We'll be watching the progress of the Farmers Alliance with interest and obviously looking very carefully at what candidates are put forward, particularly in Donegal and in this European constituency. In the meantime, Helen and Liam, thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
That is the National Farmers Alliance, and if the Irish Farmers Journal poll is anything to go by, there could be significant support for that venture in the forthcoming elections. It's 22 minutes to 11 o'clock. Time for a short break. Back after these. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio with Donal Kavanagh. 086 60 25,000 for your texts and WhatsApp messages. 074 91 25,000 for your telephone calls. Caroline and Niamh taking your calls this morning. Caroline producing as well. And you can also contact us, comments at Highland Radio on email, at Highland Radio on Twitter or X, and Highland Hub on Facebook. Now, it is time for our history discussion. Now, earlier this year, the 150th National Commemoration of the Famine was celebrated in Milford with the visit of President Michael D. Higgins. But what was life like in Donegal in the subsequent year and the subsequent decades? Did things improve? What were the challenges of hardship and poverty and either further famine? Now, that brings us to today's history topic, and I'm absolutely delighted to say that we are joined on Zoom by Dr. Joe Kelly, a historian, educator and man of fascinating and well-spoken and well-articulated opinions. And Joe's going to talk to us about an event that captured national and international headlines in its day, the Clonmacnoise and Gweadore Sheep War of the late 1850s and the early 1860s. Joe, every time I get the privilege of speaking to you, you bring up an absolutely fascinating topic. And I have to say, this week you've outdone yourself.
I don't know about that. You know, they say that if you don't learn from history, then you'll have to learn from history. And the second time it costs more.
Yeah.
So maybe just the way that my own learning, I see everything in the present through the eyes of history, which gives you a very different perspective on things because you see something similar having happened before and here it's happening again. So when we talk about the years after the famine, maybe we could place that into the context of the present day, you know, the years after COVID and what's happening in our society and the challenges that we have. But yes, you're very correct. In the years after the famine, there were great challenges. It just didn't stop. You know, the famine disappeared. There were countless famines after that, particularly here in Donegal. And maybe at another stage we'll talk about it, but I would argue that the famine of the 1880s was worse in Donegal than it was in 1847, but the relief was much more tailored, so therefore not as many people died as a result of it. But 14,000, you know, people, they estimate somewhere around that during famine times in Donegal. So, look, you're asking what were the challenges. There were lots of challenges, and one of the big challenges, Donald, was nationally, the population fell on rural Ireland by about 25%. So right away, there were less people, mouths to be fed on small farms. But here in Donegal, actually, particularly in Gweadore, the population went up. In Clonmacnoise, the population only declined 7%. So there was still the same amount of stress on the farm trying to provide for large families. And there were other things as well. There were continuous blights, not just in 1847, 52, 55. And the Catholic priests were the only educated people that would represent the tenants. You've got to understand, most Donegal actually was the most illiterate county in Ireland up until the 1880s. And Clonmacnoise and Gweadore were the worst parishes almost in Donegal for illiteracy. Now, by illiteracy, I mean that they couldn't read or write. And particularly in English, they had no English. They were monoglots, only speaking Irish. So how, if you're in a situation where you can't articulate your hardship and your stress and your difficulties, who's going to speak for you?
Yeah.
And when your mind can't speak and your mouth can't speak, then that leads into violence, that leads into physical tension, because that's the only way they can communicate. And in that sense, the Catholic priests of the time who had been college educated and were equal, say, to the establishment and the landlords, they spoke up on behalf of the tenants. And in fairness to them, they championed and articulated the tenants' strife. So, look, the post-famine, the landlords introduced a lot of new policies, and a lot of them weren't good, particularly for the tenants. You see, the thing is, it's often said that while the tenants were taking one foot out of the grave after the famine, and back into survival mode, the landlords actually were taking a step into the grave. And that's true, because by the end of the 1890s, landlordism was almost dead in Ireland. Their estates, different land acts, they had to sell their estates, their tenanted estates. So basically, it was the end of landlordism post-famine. But they'd been hit very, very hard during the famine. You mentioned Michael D. Higgins, and he went to what was the site of the Milford Workhouse. And the workhouses, there was workhouses throughout the whole length and breadth of Ireland. I think 143, I think it was 143 of them. And they had to be funded. And the way they were funded was by the rates. But if people were too poor, if their land was too poor, then they couldn't pay for the rates. And so, for example, in Clonmacnoise and Gweadore, the rates were if your farm was less than £4, you didn't pay rates. It's just like today, if you're in social welfare, you know, you get certain benefits. Well, it was the same with the rates. If you didn't have a farm worth more than £4, so that's 960 old pence, LSD, 960 old pence. Well, the average farm in Gador was about 440 pence.
Yeah.
So it's way, way, way below the poverty line. So these people couldn't afford to pay for the workhouses. So it fell on the landlords to pay for that. So the landlords, a lot of them became encumbered or indebted paying for the famine. There was a great landlord, Hamilton, in Donegal Town. There's a book written about him, Recklessly Generous Landlord. He dug deep into his own pockets to pay for people during their poverty because he had it. But he put himself into debt. He was the book title is Recklessly Generous. He was generous to a point of being reckless in his own financial. So
but he was also the exception.
Landlord.
Yeah, he was very much the exception.
And all for in Alford here in Clonidy and some others, they borrowed about £4,000 worth of grain, or money to value of grain, to feed people. You know, they did understand what people were going through. But then the problem was, how are they going to make back this money? How are they going to survive? Because they'd been losing rents during the famine. Mm-hmm. People couldn't pay them. So like any good system, and it's back to present Ireland, when you're making a loss, look at our banks. When you make it a loss, you pile it back on to the customers and you'll make a profit some way. So apart from rents going up, they found new ways of getting more income. So, for example, seaweed, which kelp, which was used for spreading on the land to fertilise the crops and the potatoes in particular, there was a tax on that. There was a tax on burning lime, which was used for whitewashing. There was a tax put on turbary, turf. There was a tax put on gathering wood. There was a tax put on different things. And one of the taxes that they introduced was they decided to take all the mountainous areas around northwest Donegal and advertise them in England for rent to foreign shepherds to see if that would work. And what happened was the first was Oban Woodhouse up in where Dunluey is now, at the foot of Errigill. He was an Armagh solicitor. And he bought land there and he put an advertisement in the paper in England, and Wright, a shepherd called Wright in Aberdeen, took up the contract and paid him for the renting of these mountains and brought over sheep. So he brought over about 1,100 sheep from across the waters to Gador. And the same happened in Clonmacnoise.
And this presumably led to displacement of local people that would have used those mountains and those fields.
Yeah, you've got it now. Yeah, absolutely. And that's so there was a system of kind of a transhumans that the farms down near the coast of Gador and Clonmacnoise wouldn't have been of big size. So what they did was, it's still the case, townlands had mountainous townlands. So there's a place called, for example, Ballybowes Mountain or Devlin, which is Ballyconnell. Different mountains went with the townlands on the lower land area. So everybody had a right to put their sheep and their cattle up into the mountainous region of their townland. Now they couldn't put their sheep or their cattle up. So that meant that they had to keep them on the lowlands. The problem was that they needed those lowlands for growing their crops, their potatoes. So they had a choice to make. And so oftentimes they sold their sheep and sold their cattle. So now they hadn't the food from it. They hadn't the butter from it. They hadn't the wool from it. So the women couldn't knit the socks. They couldn't sell the socks and make more income. So this led to massive poverty and upheaval. And so in a way, the mountains had become a sea of white cotton, sheep dotted all over, black-faced sheep that they imported. And the first place it happened was in Alton Farm. And I know Seamus Doohan, who does the hill walking, DonegalWalking.net, he is doing a walk to Lough Alton Farm tomorrow as part of the festival that they're running there in Dunluey. And so I'm sure he'll explain a lot more than I today. But that was where it started. There was a kind of a castle fort built there, and the shepherd was there, and about 40 men arrived to him in 1856 one night and threatened him with a gun and told him to leave, and if he wouldn't be gone, he'd be shot. So then thus began the sheep war. And you know, if you look at the figures, natural agrarian crime, that's crime relating to land, would have been about 4% nationally in the 1850s and 1860s. Well, in Clan Leahy and Gador, it was off the Richter scale. It was 80, 90%. Yeah. And so what happened was some of the tenants went and they started killing the sheep because they were being displaced. And so this led to what we know as the Clan Leahy and Gador Sheep Wars. And so some were estimated about 2,000 sheep either died or disappeared in that period of time. It's a fascinating period of history. And it led to a terrible lot of destitution and poverty and hardship. The government responded by, as they do, bringing in more police and taxed the people for that police to a tune of 3,200. And then every sheep that was killed was a cost of 25 shillings to the local tenants that they had to pay. It was a tax put on them. And then there was another tax, a police tax put on the local people. Mm-hmm. So the people were really hard pressed, not just from losing the right to graze the mountains, and so they'd also had further taxes to pay because of the loss of the sheep and because of the shepherds. Now, they developed a system, and it was discovered at the time, Bishop McGittigan, 25 shillings a sheep. And what the shepherds started doing themselves was killing their own sheep because they knew they were going to get 25 shillings a sheep. So it was a profitable thing. It was called the Hunter was one of the shepherds. Yeah. It was called the Hunterian system. So like that became a problem for the tenants. They weren't killing all these sheep, but it was reported that they were, and the shepherds were making a nice, handsome reward or
presumably,
profit for it.
Presumably the tenants did not have 25 shillings. I mean, you know, the money wasn't there in the community. So, I mean, if you're talking about 2,000 sheep being killed, I mean, there were not 2,000 payments of 25 shillings surely coming from that community, which was already decimated.
Well, that was what was they sent about 40 to 60 at various periods police into the area, and they went round and they collected as much as they could from the people. They forced them, and if they didn't, they impounded whatever little animals they had, cows and sheep that they had left. They impounded those and took them off them. Now, again, I go back to the clergy. The Catholic clergy stepped in and said, look, this is crazy that's going on here. These are poor people. They're not able to defend themselves. They're not able to speak for themselves. And so what happened was, and I can't imagine it has happened since, but 10 Catholic priests met in Dunfanaghy, there where Father Martin Doohan is the parish priest. They met there in 1858 and they issued this appeal about the distress being caused in northwest Donegal and how people were in a famine-like situation, that they were naked and destitute and desolate. And this appeal went worldwide. It had an unbelievable effect. The 10 Catholic priests had signed this. Father Doherty was in Gador. He was very, very much championing the people. And Father McFadden, Sired Moore and got a hark. He was a young man at the time. And he was very much second in command to what he was doing. And they really pushed for the tenants. And the appeal had such an effect that it embarrassed the local landlords. And they had to make a report as to this alleged destitution that was being, you know, was happening because of the sheep, the mountains being rented out. About 16% of the land of Clan Leahy was rented out to shepherds. That's quite a lot of land. And so they made a report and said, no, there's no destitution. But that didn't wash with the media, not just national, mm-hmm. international media. And it caused a parliamentary inquiry. It was called the Select Committee on Destitution in Clan Leahy and Gador. It's a fascinating. You could do a talk on that alone. It's over. There were over 32 witnesses taken from Gador and Clan Leahy to Westminster. It was a parliamentary inquiry, just like the tribunal with RT and Ryan Tuberty. It was something of that. But there's 8,000 questions asked. So it describes every aspect of social life in northwest Donegal at that time. And basically, the report was very much damning of, in many ways, depending on how you read it, of what was going on here in Clan Leahy and Gador. But as MPs themselves, MPs were landed people at that time, and they found in favour of the landlords. They weren't going to go against the landlords. So while the inquiry reported, the majority reported that there was no destitution in Clan Leahy, the high moral ground went with the tenants. And so that gave them a lot of confidence. And Father McEncrow in Australia heard about this destitution, and he decided to raise money in Australia, in New South Wales. and he raised over £5,500. But he didn't want to send that to Clonmany or Gador to the priests because he said that would find its way back into the landlord's pockets. And so what he did was he went to the Australian government and said, look, I will pay £5 for an immigration passage if you allow people to come on these boats from Ireland. And the Australian government agreed to it, and it became the biggest assisted migration to New South Wales at that time. And over about 1,380-odd people left on boats paid by Father McEnroe and his supporters from Australia, from Clonmany and Gador. In fact, 808 people left Gador and 440 people left Clonmany on these boats between 1859 and 1862. It was called the Assisted Migration Programme to New South Wales. So very, very interesting. And what's very surprising about it was the average age, for example, on the first boat was the Caribou, or no, it was the Sapphire was the first boat, was 19. Could you imagine 19 people, 19-year-old, sorry, was the average age, 400 people leaving a community with the average age of 19.
Would that not have created a whole new series of social problems locally then? Because if you've taken away all your, say, young, able men who would have been working the fields and so on and so forth, if you have an older population left that's going to need more support, you know, that must have had a huge economic impact on the society there, particularly among the tenants.
Yeah, it did, yes. And it also had the effect of bringing the sheep board nearly to the end as well, apart from the taxes and things like that. The fact that it was mostly young people that would probably be active. If we look at 1916, look at the Civil War, War of Independence, it was always young men and women, very young ages. Look at our Drumbo martyrs, you know, 25, 26, 23, 24. That was their ages. All of them were very, very young. So young people are usually the people that are trying to change society. And here, all of a sudden, there was a hole blown in the population demographic in Gador and Clonmany. And also, might I add, the Derry evicted tenants, they made use of these boats as well. So it had a massive impact, yes, on the demographics of the time. And it took generations for it to recover because you hadn't the young people to replace and families, etc. So it did lead to, but it depopulated the area as well. Yeah. But look, history repeats itself. I mean, if we did a survey, how many people have, I don't know, in Fannet, for example, since Christmas, over 40 young people have left that small rural place.
Yeah.
How many people have left our rural areas to go abroad because they feel that there's, like, it's like the sheep coming into the mountains. What has come, you know, society, is it's maybe changed so much that they're struggling economically to buy a house or get a job that
and
pays.
As you referenced earlier, there is a walk to Alton Castle being led on Sunday at 11 a.m. But the night before, Saturday 12th, in a pub of Dunluce, there is a talk on the Sheep War of Clonmany and Gador. A number of eminent speakers, including, I see, Joseph O'Kellick on the list of speakers. So if people are interested in this, they can hear yourself and others, Vincent Breslin, Lord George Hale, Roy Greenslade, and others, discussing this in the Pobl Dunluce. But in the meantime, Joe, it's been absolutely fascinating. One interesting comment, actually, a caller has said, listening to Joe on about the British government taxing the land, our own Irish government doing the same thing at the moment with the residential zoned land tax. I mean, you know, so maybe the apple hasn't fallen very far from the tree.
Ah, yeah, look, as I said to you, I see the present with historical eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, who are the new landlords? Look at just in the last 3 days, the amount of profits that the banks have made. You know, it's circular. Look at, they're talking about putting up the cost of tolls for people travelling. Just look at the price of electricity. Look at the price of oil and gas going up again. And so history is cyclical. And one wonders when we'll ever learn, because if we don't learn from history, we're going to keep making the same mistakes again. And that's the sad facts of it. But look, it was a very painful and sad time in our history. But it's, I'll be giving a talk, and I know there are others as well. And I think it's open to the public, and congratulate the committee up in Dunluce on organising this. They have some wonderful speakers, as you mentioned there, and I'm glad to be part of it.
Dr. Joe Kelly, a pleasure as always. Thank you very much indeed. Garamacheth.
Mighty and white.
Sláinte.